The white figure pointed. Somehow Stubbsy Florac had survived the carnage. He was crawling over the smashed wooden floorboards, blood seeping from dozens of lacerations. "Damn it," Paula hissed. If she slugged it out with her opponent, the outcome was uncertain. ANA had equipped her well, but the faction whose representative she was obviously facing had a pretty formidable arsenal, too. If she won, she'd never know who was challenging her, and through her, ANA, so brazenly. There would be nothing left of the vanquished except a dispersing ion swarm. And whoever won, it would mean the certain body loss of Stubbsy Florac and probably his death. There might even be more survivors hidden in the villa's wreckage. He did have several of the stupid Amazon bodyguards. Despite all the traits and qualities she had cast off over the centuries, her certainty of right and wrong remained absolute. She, Paula Mayo, did not have the right to put civilians in danger, even civilians as repugnant as Florac. Her place in the universe was to uphold the law. However inconvenient Florac was at this moment, she could not risk allowing him to come in harm's way. In any case, Florac would be a valuable witness. An opponent such as a faction was best dealt with by ANA, not herself and a representative clashing in this fashion. She stood still, staring at the cold glowing figure on the other side of the pool. Her field scan probed at the lustrous force field, but couldn't find a single flaw. One thing, it wasn't Marius. Too short. The white figure was drawn up into its starship. A hand was raised in a mocking wave. A silly wiggle of the hips and then the airlock closed, cutting off the shining aurora. The starship slid smoothly into the storm clouds, creating a dark wall as it vanished into the stratosphere. Paula used the sensors on the Alexis Denken to track it as far as possible. The stealth effect came on when it was cleared of the ionosphere. There was a minute quantum signature which the smart core could just detect as it accelerated high above the equator. Then it must have dropped into hyperspace. The finest sensors ANA could devise picked up a tiny disturbance among the quantum fields which indicated an ultra drive. Then there was nothing. Paula put her lips together and whistled a long, single note. The combat bots hovering above the villa showed her Stubbsy Florac writhing in agony on his decimated wooden flooring. She hurried over in time to see strange gray growths blooming from his mouth and nose. Her U-shadow opened a link directly to his microcellular clusters. "Florac, can you receive this?" The furry gray substance was emerging from his eyes. "Who was it, Florac? Do you know who did this?" The only reply that came down the link was a burst of white noise. "Okay, I'm getting you into a medical chamber. My ship has the best in the Commonwealth. You'll be fine." She picked him up and flew straight into the airlock, ordering the smart core to initiate level 1 decontamination procedures. She really didn't like the look of the gray, fungal stuff. "Hang on in there, Florac. You'll be okay. You stay with me, understand?" It only took her a few seconds to get to the cabin, but he was convulsing by the time she lowered him into the coffin-sized medical chamber. The steel sheen malmetal top closed fluidly over him. A scan revealed that the gray substance had invaded his entire body, consuming and corrupting every organ. It had twined itself round his nerves, not damaging them, but embracing them. Paula watched the readouts in disgust and dismay, as the intruder fed a continuous stream of impulses into every nerve fiber in Florac's body. Fronds inside his brain stimulated selected neural pathways to ensure his consciousness remained intact. There wasn't enough of his original flesh left for the medical chamber to sustain. As Paula watched, Florac died in as much agony as it was possible for a human nervous system to conduct. "Extract his memory cell," she ordered the medical chamber. But even that wasn't possible. The gray fronds had gnawed away at the memory cell, breaking it apart. She reviewed the readouts with growing alarm. The gray stuff seemed to be some kind of bionic viral, capable of breaking down both organic and inorganic compounds. It was already seeping into the instruments and manipulators interfaced with Florac's body, transforming them into more of itself, an effect inching into the casing of the medical chamber. "Hell," she grunted. The Alexis Denken shot out of the atmosphere to an altitude of 5,000 kilometers, then ejected the entire medical chamber. It tumbled away from the starship, sunlight glinting off its bright metal and plastic surfaces. Paula swept a powerful gamma-ray laser through it several times, making sure every molecule of the viral was disassociated, then finished it off with a single disruptor pulse. The now white-hot slag of the medical chamber burst apart in a sparkling swarm of effervescence. Several ground-based sensor systems locked on to the Alexis Denken. The smart core received identification demands from every city on the planet. Paula simply ignored them and flew back down to the villa again. The combat bots were circling overhead as the monsoon continued to soak the rubble. Long rivulets gurgled along the cracked paving, thick with scum and powdery mud. Paula's armor boots splashed through them as she made her way cautiously to the crater. The torn earth walls were mildly radioactive. Spy bots swooped down to scan the remnants of the underground chamber. The first thing they detected amidst all the charred plastic and warped metal was the burned body. It appeared to be another of Florak's bodyguards. Then they picked up the signature of the gray substance. There was a patch clinging to a chunk of fractured rock. Its edges rippled as it sought to grow. "Damn it," Paula swore. There was nothing for it. She called two of the combat bots down and began a systematic sterilization of the site using gamma lasers. That was when she called ANA. "Things are getting a little crazy out here," she confessed. "The accelerators must be desperate to keep Trublum silenced." "No, that's not what happened here." Paula was standing in the remnants of the lounge, using her field scan on the broken fragments of the exotic matter generator. There wasn't much left, and she was fairly certain her own firepower hadn't been wholly responsible. It had self-destructed at some point during the fight. Whoever was here could have eliminated him the second he turned up. They didn't. They wanted to use him as bait for me. This exotic matter system was intended to capture me. It's an extremely elaborate trap. Someone went to a lot of trouble. I got lucky. Troblum's ship arrived when it did. Another second and I would have been engulfed. You have acquired a great many enemies over the years. Yes. But this one has the backing of a faction. They had an ultra-drive ship effectively equal to the Alexis Denken. They had this revolting viral, and they knew I was coming to meet with Troblum. Logically, they must be allied with the accelerators, yet they didn't eliminate Troblum. Who would the accelerators possibly turn to at this point? Who then wouldn't do what they needed most and silence Troblum? It's not logical. This person certainly doesn't seem to have any moral qualms about killing anyone, and I was obviously intended for the torture chamber, or some variant. Even as she said it, a really bad feeling was growing in her mind. She remembered that ridiculous wiggle which the glowing white figure had performed as it ascended into the starship. There was certainly one person who would fit the bill, but that wasn't possible. She was very definitely in suspension and had been for over 900 years. Of course, if anyone had the ability to break her out, it would be a faction. "They wouldn't dare," she whispered. But the accelerators were becoming increasingly arrogant, and they had been planning their moves for decades. "What do you intend next?" ANA asked. Paula stared round at the rain-sodden area as the lightning flickered again. "I need a full forensic examination here. It's a long shot. But if there's anything that will tell us where the exotic matter cage was built and by whom, I need to know." "I will dispatch a team immediately." "Thank you. I'm going to investigate Troblum a little closer. I need to work out where he's gone. There's nothing else I can do until Oscar snags the second dreamer for us."
"As you wish."
Paula looked up into the wild clouds, wishing she could see the stars.
"Any change on the devourment phase?"
"Not yet."
"Will you be able to survive it?"
"I don't know. What will you do?"
"Ultimately, if it can't be stopped, I'm not sure. The High Angel will take me to another galaxy if I want, but right now we need to prevent our dear species from making things any worse."
Araminta didn't sleep the whole night long. How could she?
"No," she'd said.
"No to the Sky Lord. No to the entity that was offering to guide a goodly portion of humanity to what they regarded as their nirvana. No. Said because I'm the second dreamer.
It's me. Me. Oh, Ozzy, please help me. This simply cannot be. Me. She kept turning that over and over. How could it be me? Because of some distant ancestor she'd never even heard of until the other day? This Melanie and her friendship with the Sylphon? All that, all those unknowns from centuries ago had come pressing down on her, had taken away her destiny, her self-determination. Fate had chosen her. Me. And now the million, the billions of living dream followers would look to her to help them join with the Sky Lord. And she'd said no. The Sky Lord had been surprised, shocked even. She'd felt that wounded astonishment linger as she withdrew her mind from contact. That wasn't an answer which fitted its reality. She might just as well said no to gravity for all the sense it made. What she'd done terrified her, but it was instinctive. She didn't want to be the second dreamer. Just hours before the contact, she'd decided her future after days of soul-searching and self-discovery. She was going to be Mrs. Bovies. She was going to get herself more bodies and become multiple. And they'd live here in this grand house, or a new one she'd build, equally delightful. And half of their bodies would be in bed together the whole time. She would make him as happy as he made her. And the future would be bright and lovely and full of promise. There might be children. What kind of children did multiples have? Did he want them? They'd never talked about any of this yet. So much was waiting for her out there in the years to come. So many discoveries. So much joy. Of course she'd said no. What else could she say? I will not be a part of that. That is not me. Billions wanted it to be. They were going to insist. But they will never know who I am. I will never talk to the Sky Lord again. That was the decision she'd made when dawn came to the sky outside the bedroom. She was wretchedly tired and shaking. There were dried tears on her cheeks from the quiet sobbing in the lonely hours, as gentle rain had pattered against the window. But she knew her mind now. She would stand firm. On the big bed beside her, the blonde teenager, Mr. Bovey, lay on his back with a slight frown, mouth twitching as he dealt with a sour dream. Nothing as bad as mine, she told him silently. He too would never know, she decided. The burden would be too much. This will end, eventually. I will endure and ride it out. Araminta bent over and kissed the youthful body, gently at first, on his brow, his cheek, his mouth. He stirred. The frown eased away. She smiled at that and kissed his throat. Her hands caressed the supple muscle on his chest, as the mélange program rose out of her lacunas. Her raging thoughts stilled as she breathed slowly and carefully, following her own deep rhythms to achieve the composure she sought. Now she could concentrate fully on the body beside her. For the full hour which followed, there were no distractions, no external thoughts and doubts. It was so good to forget Sky Lords and Second Dreamers and Living Dream, replacing them with good, dirty humans. Sex.
Forgive me, especially after this morning, but you don't look so good, Mr. Bovey said. Araminta nodded grudgingly as she finally climbed out of the big bath. It was such a luxury, just lounging in oiled, scented water, rather than snatch a quick minute in a spore shower. One her poor body deserved. Your fault, she teased. She couldn't quite put the right emphasis behind it. Her thoughts were drifting back to the revelations of last night with the surety of a tide. It was the young Celtic one who handed her a huge towel. Are you all right? You're not having second thoughts?
Ozzy, no. This is the only truly good decision I've made. Probably ever.
He smiled proudly but couldn't completely hide his worry. You seem troubled. I'm concerned. She started to rub the water off her legs.
It's been a big week. I'm all right. Just didn't sleep well, that's all. I'll take some kind of pep infuser when I get home.
Home? He frowned. I've still got to get the apartments finished. We both know I need the money.
Right.
He scratched at his hair, looking perplexed. Araminta wasn't used to that. Whenever they had serious conversations, Mr. Bovey always preferred to use his middle-aged, black-skinned body. The one she'd had their very first date with, who almost qualified as the father figure. She never had worked out if that was deliberate on his part.
Look, he said, I hate to be the one with the bad news, but you clearly haven't accessed the Unisphere this morning. Just the way he said it made her heart sink. She had told her U-Shadow to suspend any Unisphere contact before they went to bed last night. Now it reconnected her and began pulling out priority news items.
Oh, great Ozzy, she gasped.
It was all there. The invasion by Alezalan forces down by the docks. Paramilitary troops moving across the city. Large capsules patrolling the skies, halting any civilian traffic. When she rushed over to the window, she could make out several of the capsules floating passively above the river cairns, insidious dark ovoids set against the dusky dawn-lit clouds. Colwyn's weather protection force field was on, covering the entire city. It wasn't any storm the invaders were interested in. They were preventing any capsules from leaving. And worse, much, much worse, the message from Director Trachtenberg at Centurion Station about the void starting to expand. A devourment phase, all the commentators were calling it, and they were equally clear that it was the fault of the second dreamer for rejecting the Sky Lord. No such thing as coincidence was the phrase that kept reverberating round her head. Everyone was using it.
I can't stay here,
Araminta moaned.
You're not serious. It's dangerous out there. They're restricting the reports, but our fellow citizens are not taking this lightly. There's been several clashes already, and it's not even breakfast time yet.
They're here for me, she realized. A whole world invaded, violated because of me. Ozzy, forgive me.
I'll just go straight home, she said stubbornly. I have to get to the apartments. They're all I've got, you can see that, can't you?
She felt shabby saying that. It was emotional bullying, but all she wanted to do was get away from him. It was completely wrong. This was the person she was planning to marry. He should be trusted. She just couldn't risk trusting him with something of this magnitude. He'd agreed to marry a girl struggling to make it as a property developer, not some walking galactic catastrophe.
I do understand, he said so very reluctantly. But they've shut down all the capsule traffic. Half of me's are stuck all across town.
Araminta started to pull her clothes on. There was a whole closet in the bathroom, which was hers, so at least she could dress practically with dark jeans and a blue sweater.
My trike pod is in the garage. I left it here a couple of weeks back.
Her U-Shadow was hurriedly checking travel restrictions in Colwyn City. The traffic management net carried a full prescription on non-official air vehicles, backed by the certificate of the mayor's office and the Vyosha Federal Transport Agency. However, ground vehicles were still permitted to operate in the city precincts, with an advisory caution that citizens should only use them for essential trips. There were a great many links to official Vyosha government bulletins about their inclusion in the free trade zone at core planet level, and how, after a brief transition period, everything would return to normal and a strong economic growth phase would begin, bringing a major upswing to everyone's lifestyle. Just for an instant, she recalled Lycan and his grand plans for the free trade zone, but she dismissed those thoughts at once.
Let some of me's go, Mr. Bovey said. I can check the place over for you.
I am not going to start our life together by being dependent on you, she said, hating herself now. He looked even more unhappy.
All right, Ozzy, but you're obdurate.
Think of it as tenacious, and how that works in your favor in bed. Ozzy, help the paramilitaries if they get in your way. But his sympathetic smile wasn't exactly wholehearted. I don't suppose one of me's can come with you.
Have you got a ground vehicle? She asked.
No.
You're really sweet. Still want to marry me?
Yes.
Even when there's going to be many me's?
Just take care.
There was a whole team of hims assembled to wave goodbye to her when she clambered on to the trike pod. She was mildly surprised to find the power cell still had half a charge left. All his familiar faces wore the same mournful expression as she waved airily. Then she set off down the narrow gravel track which cut through the grounds to the road outside. There was a point when she'd just passed the last of hims when she thought her resolution might buckle and send her rushing back, confessing everything. It was coupled with a horror that she'd never see him again, that no matter her determination, this was all too big for her to cope with. If that's so, then I can't drag him down into it. So she kept the trike steady and true, riding across the garden that retained its light coating of glistening moisture from last night's rain. The old iron gate at the end of the track creaked as its actuators swung it open for her. Then she was out on the empty road lined with tall lackfall trees, whose reddish-green leaves were chittering in the gentle breeze that stirred under the city's force-field dome. The worst part of the trip was riding over the big single-arch bridge to the northern bank. She felt horribly exposed to the big capsules that slid through the air on either side of the bridge. It was so strange seeing the city without its normal capsule traffic zipping about, as if the metropolis was injured somehow. People on the bridge seemed to share the feeling. Many citizens had decided to walk to work, showing their defiance through an obstinate insistence on pursuing their normal day as best they could. Public cabs still hummed along the central rails, packed tight with commuters. And she'd never known so many people actually had trike pods. A great many of them clearly hadn't been outside their garages for years. As she cleared the apex of the long bridge, Araminta allowed herself to dip into the local Gaia field, receiving the strident emotions of her fellow residents, the determination and anger they radiated and supported each other with. It was a buoyant kinship, though she didn't dare allow any of her own feelings to trickle out. She was all too conscious of people like Danal delving into the confluence nests, trying to locate any hint of her thoughts, her location, her identity. And how was that for irony? One of her hunters buying an apartment from her, actually living next door to his prey, neither of them knowing. She wondered if he'd be able to scent the guilt on her. Ahead of her, she could see three capsules hovering over the far end of the bridge. Dozens of the suited paramilitaries were clustered there, examining everyone coming over. She almost turned around there and then, but that would draw attention to her. And they'd be watching the whole bridge for such a reaction, she was sure of that. So she pressed on, wondering what that ancestor Melanie would do. She, who'd bequeathed so much trouble into Araminta's easy life. Was she some kind of tough government agent, a war hero? Why was she a Sylphan friend? Araminta promised herself that when she got back to the apartments, the first thing she'd do was look up the woman whose fault this all was. The paramilitaries were simply standing waiting in intimidating ranks, holding long rifles across their chests as everyone from the bridge walked or drove past them. The Unisphere nodes at the end of the bridge were querying U-shadows. Araminta sent her identity certificate, looking nervously at the bulky figures, wondering what their faces looked like. They were sharing nothing with the Gaia Field, which was strange, for anyone affiliated with Living Dream must surely have Gaia motes. Were they nervous? They must know an entire planet hated them. Whatever smart core the Living Dream forces were using to try and identify the second dreamer didn't seem unduly interested in Araminta. None of the paramilitaries showed any interest in her as the trike trundled past them. Just on the other side, a group of local youths was gathering. Shouts echoed through the damp air, directed at the paramilitaries. Several marks of construction site bot waddled and rolled towards the dark ranks, waving power tools threateningly and leaking miscreant programs that blocked and distorted the cybersphere nodes. By the time she was 100 meters along Gathano Avenue, past the bridge, the paramilitary squad commander finally took action against the taunts and belligerent bots. The shouting increased in volume and anger, interspaced with the unpleasant, high-pitched hum of energy weapons directed at the bots. Araminta increased her speed as a pair of capsules swept overhead to reinforce their colleagues. The last thing she could afford now was to be taken into custody. By the time she reached her apartments in the Bodant district 40 minutes later, the number of people milling round in the park outside was disturbing. She knew she was being prejudiced, but most of them looked like the kind of gang members which the Unisphere News always claimed had a stranglehold on the neighboring Healy district. When she allowed their Gaia Field emissions to register, she found an atmosphere of dark resentment swirling across the park, more frightening than the anger of the commuters. There was purpose here. Violence wasn't far away. She steered the trike down into the underground garage, thankful for the dual gate security, then took the lift up.
When the doors opened on the fourth floor, Araminta prayed that Denal and Mareble were either out or wouldn't hear her crossing the vestibule. How good had she made the soundproofing? The living dream followers had only moved in 2 days ago, declaring they could no longer wait until the official completion date, which left her with a load of work to finish for them before the full price was deposited in her account. Not today. The door of the apartment she was using closed behind her, and she pressed her back up against it, as if reinforcing the charming old-fashioned brass lock. Breath hissed out of her in a sorrowful gasp, and she slowly slid down onto the parquet floor.
I can just stay here. I don't need to go out. I can get nutrient fluid for the culinary unit pumped in. I can work on getting the last two apartments finished. By the time that's done, all this will have blown over.
Except for the void expansion phase. But the Rael will fight that. That's what the Unisphere shows say. It was a pitiful delusion, she knew. Maybe 30 minutes later, Cressida called. Just seeing her icon appear cheered Araminta up no end. If anyone knew what to do, it would be Cressida. And maybe, just maybe, she could tell her cousin about being the second dreamer.
Darling, how are you? Where are you?
I'm okay, thanks. I'm at the apartments.
Oh, I thought you were with Mr. Bove.
I was. I came home this morning.
You crossed the city yourself?
Yes, it wasn't any trouble. I used my trike pod.
Dear Ozzy, that was stupid, darling. You're not to do anything like that again, do you understand? I mean it. Life is about to get very ugly here. I've been talking with my contacts in City Hall and the State Government House. These living dream bastards are not going to go home. Vyosha has been royally screwed by our crap-for-brains Prime Minister.
Yes, I know, she said weakly.
And the worst place for anyone to be right now is Colwyn City. They think that dickhead, the second dreamer, is living here, and there's no way he'll escape. They've broken just about every single article of the Commonwealth Constitution by invading us. They're not going to stop now. Do you know who they've sent to oversee the search?
No.
Well, don't tell anyone, but Cleric Phelim himself has come through the wormhole to take charge.
Who's that?
Oh, darling, keep up. He's Ethan's chief of staff, the enforcer himself. A greater turd you will not meet, and I include your old chum, Lycan, in that list.
Oh, great Ozzy.
Araminta drew her knees up to her chin and hugged her legs tight.
Sorry, darling, didn't mean to worry you excessively. We'll be all right, of course, which is actually why I'm calling. There's a way out, if you're interested.
What way out?
The weather dome is on. No one can get out.
Ha! That just deters capsules. After all, the damn thing is only there to protect us from clouds and wind, not ward off Ockison Empire warships or the void boundary. There's actually a big gap, well, 20 meters anyway, between the lower edge of the dome and the ground to allow normal airflow. We'd all suffocate in a week without that.
So we can get through.
We can just walk out until they seal that up with their troops, yes. Even then, there are various tunnels available if you know the right people. My U-Shadow will send the files over for you. Anyway, the point is, some friends and I are chartering a starship. We're leaving completely, not just Colwyn, but Vyosha itself. There's a seat on it for you if you want. I'm holding it as part of our family's block booking.
But Mr. Bovey?
Darling, you'd need 5 starships to get all of hims off. Be realistic and be sensible. In times like this, you have to think about your own arse.
But they're not letting anyone out of the city, let alone off-planet.
You leave that to us. Anybody who believes Living Dream is some kind of irresistible force has clearly forgotten about lawyers. We're chartering a foreign-owned starship with full diplomatic status. If Phelim tries restricting that, he'll find himself staring down a Commonwealth Navy warship disruptor cannon. Let's see who blinks first then.
I see.
So are you in or out?
I don't know.
There's one thing, darling, which I'm going to have to bring up. It won't be cheap. Where do you stand on selling the apartments?
Oh, not good. I still don't have deposits on the last two, and I haven't completed any of the others. Nobody's going to buy anything now.
Yes, that is a problem. You didn't find that offload sucker like I told you then. Never mind. You should never underestimate the market when it comes to making things happen for a profit. Give it a day, and there'll be venture groups on half the external worlds offering Vyosha citizens cash for their business and properties. It'll be way below yesterday's market rate, but they'll be thinking long term. Once Living Dream grabs the second dreamer, things will start to stabilize. Give it 20 years and everything will be back to normal, and those properties will be 5 times the value. If it's going to be normal again, why are you leaving? Normal for a free trade zone hagiocracy planet, darling, which I have no intention of spending the rest of my lives on, thank you very much. I want a nice liberal market-based democracy with all the opportunities for misunderstanding and conflict that entails. Whenever there's an argument, you'll find us lawyers offering to help, and help equals lots of money. On which subject, I've already transferred my cash accounts off-world. Already? Certainly, darling. The banks were keen to welcome me, and I wasn't exactly the first. There's enough money flying off-planet right now to leave our beloved Prime Minister a magnificent economic nightmare by lunchtime, never mind tomorrow. The only thing she has left to worry about is how painful her body loss is going to be when her previously loyal voters get their hands on her. So, do you want me to see if I can offload your apartments for you? I have some finance seekers, semi-sentients, I can assign the problem to. Yes. Yes, I suppose so. Great, so, I'll reserve that ticket for you. Yes, do that. Araminta just said it without thinking. She didn't want to leave, but Cressida had to be placated somehow, and anything else might be suspicious. Ozzy, it didn't take me long to become a paranoid schemer, did it? Don't worry, Cressida said. 10 days from now we'll be sipping cocktails on the pool terrace of La Sinal on Etina. It'll be fun. A new beginning. The call ended, and Araminta stared at the semi-decorated open-plan living room in a mild daze. She couldn't believe that even Cressida could abandon her whole life with such casual ease. But then that was Cressida for you, thinking faster and smarter than anyone else. She'd probably run through the whole shock, anger, assessment, calculation, and action stages in the first hour. While Araminta was still firmly mired in the shock segment, certainly she'd never thought what life on Vyosha would be like after things settled down. And of course Cressida was right. They would be part of the free trade zone forever now, unless the Senate and Navy intervened, or Vyosha's residents organized a rebellion. Or the void devours us. Whatever the future outcome, Cressida was right about one thing. Araminta couldn't just wait around hoping to avoid detection. She started to think what it must cost politically and economically to invade a planet. Cleric conservator Ethan and his sidekick Phelim wouldn't do that and then just hope they'd stumble across the second dreamer. They'd have a plan, and it would be a good one. Araminta forced herself to get to her feet. She didn't know what she was going to do, but doing nothing was not an option. It took 2 hours and a stint in the ship's medical chamber. But Troblum eventually stopped shaking. When he emerged, he could barely manage to cover the couple of meters from the chamber to his big chair. He sank into its padding, fearful he would start trembling again. The medical readout in his exovision showed him just how many drugs were coursing through his bloodstream right now, working in conjunction with his bionics to suppress his body's animal reactions. He had been terrified. He was also rather surprised that he was alive. All he could remember of the neutron laser shot was a dazzling flash, and a noise that was so great his bones had felt it, rather than his ears. His bionics were still repairing his retinas and inner ears. How he staggered into the ship's airlock was some kind of miracle. The smart core had to give him directions, telling him how to move every limb. But he was alive, and almost intact. The smart core had used sensors to follow the cat starship flying away from the villa, then vanishing. Her stealth systems were as good as his own, if not better. He hadn't waited around to find out how good Paula's ship was. He'd simply stealthed up and dropped into hyperdrive. Now he was sitting in trans-dimensional suspension 10 light-years out from Sholapur. "You were lucky," Catriona Salib said. "I know.
He glanced at the single item of his collection to survive. Melanie Rescorai's handheld array lay on the decking where he'd dropped it. The foxery casing was blackened round the edges, the outline of his hand clearly visible. He closed his eyes and turned his head, making sure he was looking up at the ceiling before he opened his eyelids again. All of it, gone. The entire collection. Destroyed by his own hand. Every unique, significant piece. It was as if history itself had been weakened. "You won't be again," Tricia Halgarth said, twirling a strand of Catriona's hair round her index finger as she nestled up against her friend. "I'm surprised the cat didn't finish you off."
"I'm not," Catriona said. "She's going to come after your trouble. She's going to catch you. And then you'll die. It'll probably take several years."
"Shut up!" he yelled. "Shut up! Support me."
"Okay," Catriona said. She cuddled Tricia. "You're not safe as long as the cat is around."
"And Paula didn't kill her off," Tricia said, sounding vaguely puzzled. "So you've got two options left." "Two?" he queried. "Go after her yourself and finish the job." "No, that's not an option. Only Paula can do that. She's still the only one I trust. I can't believe ANA is so compromised. That's got to be down to flaws in the Unisphere, which a faction can manipulate."
"Think on it," Catriona said earnestly. "The cat is allied with the accelerators. They gave her everything she wanted, ship, weapons, the lot, and somehow she knew where you'd be. You can't trust ANA, not anymore.
I certainly don't," she added haughtily. "It has to be the Unisphere," he said more to himself than the girls. "They intercepted my message."
"Which only makes your position worse," Tricia said.
"That leaves option two. Run, run far, and run fast. We've got to make it to another galaxy. Melanie's redemption can do it. You'll be safe there." "What if Living Dream is right and the void works for them?" he asked. "What if the cat gets inside? What if she can manipulate it the way the Water Walker did?" The girls exchanged a look. Both pouted.
"What are you thinking?" Catriona asked.
"I should warn them," Troblum said. "Paula, at least. She understands about the cat. Paula knows she has to be stopped. Paula wouldn't give up."
"So give her a call and let's get out of here," Catriona said.
Troblum couldn't help it. His gaze had dropped to Melanie's array again. "My collection is gone because of her. The damage. Just thinking about it was threatening to send his body back into shock again. Medical readouts edged back towards amber alerts. It was all I ever had," Troblum wailed. He began to curl up, as much as he ever could, his belly squashing out across his upper legs. "It took me centuries to collect them all. They were safe with me. I was their guardian." He was sobbing so hard the words were virtually unintelligible. "They were so precious, so valuable. They helped make us what we are. They were a part of our evolution. Why did nobody ever understand how important they were?"
"Troblum," Tricia crooned. "Poor Troblum."
"There are other pieces," Catriona said. "Remember you visited the Smithsonian. They actually let you touch the Charybdis. The curator was so impressed with your own preservation work. She knew you were an equal. You see, so much still remains, and its legacy is forever."
"Not with her still alive," he muttered darkly.
His hand came up to wipe the moisture from his eyes.
"She is the destroyer. She is death. She is the void. Her."
"Call Paula," Tricia said urgently. "Do it." "I have to know," he whispered. "I have to know we're safe, that she's dead for good. I can't live thinking she might appear behind me, that she'll take me and...
Catriona sighed. "You can never know that."
"Yes, I can." He pushed himself up out of the chair and walked to the back of the cabin. A small doorway expanded and he squeezed himself through. An equally small companionway let him through into the starboard midsection hold. There wasn't quite enough room for him to stand. He had to crouch and hunch his shoulders up. No matter how he twisted, his worn toga suit always brushed against the stolen cargo. The little space was crammed with machinery, piled up at random like a cybernetic dragon horde. 1,372 components, Troblum recalled. He frowned and picked up the first one, a hyperfield power manifold.
a curving sliver of some substance that seemed to alternate between being crystal and metal. He knew what each component was, but there was no structure to the piles. Everything had been shoved in at random, as his commandeered bots had pilfered it from the accelerator station's replicators. So all he had to do was assemble it, start with the central units and slowly create the new machine in the correct sequence, then integrate it with the starship's existing hyperdrive, and he'd have a fully functional ultra-drive ship, quite capable of flying to Andromeda or beyond.
"Can you do it?" Catriona asked. Her head was poking through the hatchway, a dubious expression in place.
"It'll work," Troblum said. "In theory." He couldn't even see the central units.
"Then what?"
"We'll have a genuine escape route, but I'm still going to contact Paula."
"Through the Unisphere?"
"No, I'm too frightened of the accelerator's capability. They were the ones who set the cat on me. Next time it'll be Marius, or someone else who isn't going to be distracted by an old grudge."
"Then how are you going to get in touch?"
Troblum picked up a carbon-black icosahedron, trying to index it.
"There is one other person left that I trust implicitly. He's connected to Paula, or at least he was back during the war. I'll tell him what I know about the accelerators. He can carry the message to Paula. Maybe once ANA knows about the swarm, it will stop the accelerators. The cat will be on her own then. That's when Paula can finish her."
"Who?" Catriona asked. "Who do you trust?"
"Oscar the Martyr."